Today's episode of Point Breakaway is brought to you by Robinhood. With Robinhood, you can invest in stocks, options, and ETFs right from your phone. You can even spend and earn interest on uninvested cash. And with fractional shares, you can buy stocks in any amount, including companies like Apple, Amazon, and Tesla, for as little as $1. And that's with no commission fees or account minimums. So whether you're new to investing and ready to learn, or just looking for a better experience, stop waiting and join the 10 million Robinhood users. Listeners can get started with a free stock by going to point.robinhood.com. That's point.robinhood.com. All investments involve risk. This is not investment advice, a recommendation, or a solicitation of any security. Other fees may apply. Visit rbnhd.co/fees. The free stock program is subject to certain limitations. Annual percentage yield on uninvested cash is paid by program banks and is variable. Robinhood Financial is not a bank. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Point Breakaway, the podcast about the Kings, Ducks, and anything else that comes to mind. I am Josh Cooper in Los Angeles, California. Shane O'Brien in Orange County. Obi, what's going on, man? How are you?
Coop, what's up, buddy? Obviously, you're in LA. You're going through it as well, and everyone around the world knows the whole, you know, Kobe Bryant incident. So a lot of heavy hearts around here. You got to enjoy every day, Coop, because it doesn't matter how much money you have in the bank or how big of a superstar you are, life is precious. So a lot of people around here are hurting in LA as well. So it's a good day to be alive and cherish every moment, buddy.
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, it's something that I think when you live here and you see the effect and impact it's had on people, it hits home. It's not like, it doesn't feel far away or distant. It feels like you're right here. And Obi, we don't want to make this entire podcast about Kobe, but, you know, you did want to tell a story or two, maybe, just about you're a Newport Beach resident, and Kobe lived in that area, and, what did he mean to the people there? Did you see him much around? What can you sort of say about the man himself?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, for me, just, you know, obviously you knew how big of a, you know, deal or inspiration Kobe was in LA, and he's huge in the community down here in Newport Beach. And when the tragedy happened, the thing that really blew my mind is, you know, how much of an international star Kobe was and how every country has kind of been touched by it, every sport, if it's soccer, hockey, baseball, whatever it is, football. He touched a lot of athletes and a lot of people around the world. So for me, just, I didn't know how big of an international star he was. And that was the one thing that blew me away. And, you know, being in Newport Beach, I've seen him around. We used to see him at Equinox Sports Club when me and Loops would go in there after working out. And, you know, Orange County people are pretty chill. So he'd walk in and you know, he'd have his buddies with him. He'd go right in the gym and start working on his game and then do a little workout. And, you know, if kids came up to him, he'd sign autographs and say hi to people. And, you know, I never really talked to him. I didn't want to bug him. But just from seeing him around the gym the few times that I did see him, he seemed like he was a pretty, you know, down-to-earth guy for being a superstar. Always had time for kids and fans. And you know, when you're that big of a superstar and that big of a name, it's pretty cool that you, you know, relate to the young kids, of course, and just the people in your community. So, my one good buddy, Jeff Gale, I played golf with that Big Canyon, who's an unbelievable person, unbelievable guy, does a lot for Newport Beach, was really good friends with Kobe. And, I know Jeff's hurting a little bit. So a little shout out to Jeff Gale, and to everyone else. It's a sad, sad time. And like I said, Coop, you got to enjoy every day. And, that's all I can really say about it. And obviously condolences to his family, his wife, Vanessa, and his other daughters. It's a tough time, but they got lots of friends and they'll get through it.
Yeah. And obviously the other people on the helicopter that crashed, and that perished. I mean, we have to obviously, you know, it's a tough time in this area. Our area mourns, it grieves. You know, we've tried our best at The Athletic to sort of explain what this means all around the NBA, all around the world, all around Los Angeles. One place where you can get some more information on this is the Forum Club. It's our Lakers podcast. The Kamenetsky brothers did a podcast about Kobe Bryant. Bill Oram and Brett Dawson, our Lakers reporters, have been just constantly on this story from the second it broke. And that is just a spot where you can listen and think and try to go over, or at least think about your Kobe memories, so because we all have many. So And on that, I do want to move on to the Kings and Ducks. Just wanted to address the Kobe situation first because it did affect us a lot. But we have a lot to cover on hockey. This is a hockey podcast. So I do want to start out with a story that was written by our Lisa Dillman before the All-Star break, in which Andrei Kopitar, the Kings captain, spoke to her and said that he was seeing steps in the right direction on the Kings rebuild. You kind of see the light now. You see where it's going, so it's encouraging, he said. This was basically right on the heels of a piece where Drew Doughty said that he was just kind of pissed off at the Kings rebuild and called it frustrating as hell. Not that he thought the rebuild was going poorly or didn't like the talent that was being accrued, but just simply the fact that he was just sick of rebuilding. I mean, I think you need your captain to kind of come out there and say these types of things, but is this just sort of the back and forth, I guess, between the stoic Kopitar and Doughty, who's a bit more of a loose cannon, but in a good way, when we say loose cannon, like a guy who really just kind of understand, like he is a more emotional person?
Yeah, I mean, obviously Dewey wears his heart on his sleeves, but, you know, first about the Kopitar quote, you know, I totally understand what he's saying. When last year they, you know, they bring an interim coach in halfway through the year, whatever it was, and it was a really tough year for them. And, you know, obviously all the stuff that was going on with Kovalchuk not playing and being on the fourth line. It's just anytime you have an interim head coach, it's just it's really sloppy. You don't know what's going on, especially when you're not playing well. And you know, I think it's a really big compliment to Todd. I mean, when your captain comes out and says, you know, you came in there with a fresh approach, and you can see the light at the end of the tunnel now, and I mean, it's just a good quote from the captain that he feels that the things are heading in the right direction. And, you know, like we've said, Coop, all year, they've probably been playing better hockey than their record shows. We talked a lot at the start of the season about their special teams. Their penalty kill was not getting the job done. Their power play wasn't very good. And when you play in the NHL, the teams are so close that, you know, special teams is a huge part of it. And I think that cost them a lot of wins and a lot of points early. And I got to agree with Kopia. I think Todd's coming in and done a good job. I think the rebuild's on its way. Yeah, it's going to take some time, but anytime your captain has that thing to say about your coaching staff and your organization, Rob Blake should be pretty happy about that.
And I think Kopitar is right, too. And that's not to say that Drew Doughty is wrong, because, you know, we want athletes to be emotional and vent and share their frustrations at different things. But I do think Kopitar is right about Todd McClellan. And we've talked about this. We've talked about the special teams. We do think that this is all very much moving in the right direction. And there's always been this sort of some chatter of, you know, Rob Blake, and this is now the second straight year as a general manager where they've struggled. But I do see more of a light at the end of the tunnel with this team. I really think they've got some good prospects coming up. Yes, there are some injuries. Rasmus Kupari torn ACL, out for the rest of the year. Gabe Vilardi still trying to find his footing. Those are two straight first-round draft picks that are injured. But I mean, we spoke to Alex Turcotte last week, and he sounds like a kind of kid with a good head on his shoulders. And Tobias Bjornfot's a good defenseman they have in the minors, who's a first-round pick this year. And I think if they just keep restocking the cupboard with talented players, they should be back being competitive maybe in a couple of years, in my opinion. But I do agree with Kopitar. There is a bit of a light at the end of the tunnel. And I think he also knows, as a pro athlete, if he can stay strong and stay healthy for those 2 years, then he can be leading a group of really talented youngsters in the very near future.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, you've followed the Kings for a while now, and you know Kopitar. He's a pretty even-keel guy. You know, even when you see him play his game, he's always in the right position. You can never really tell with Kopitar if things are going good or things are going bad. And as a captain, especially a captain that's, you know, in a team with a rebuild, I think that's almost a perfect guy to have in that role. And, you know, when it comes to Drew Doughty, you know, we all love Doughty, and we've talked about him a lot in this season, a lot in this podcast, as we should. But, you know, time will tell. And we talked about this last week about his contract just started kicking in, or it kicks in next year, Coop, or has it started this year?
Who, Doughty?
Yeah.
Started this year, $88 million.
So, you know, time will tell with Dewey. I mean, he's a very emotional guy. That's why he's, you know, such a great player, and you can see the way he plays on the ice. Emotion is a big part of his game. And time will tell if he can handle this rebuild, because it is going to take some time. excuse me. So we'll see if he can handle it. And you know, only he will be able to decide that, if he can handle it and work through it. If not, then, like we said, maybe he'll go to the GM and be like, it might be time for a change of scenery for him. But hopefully the rebuild, you know, moves quicker than it does slower.
Wouldn't that be something? I mean, I know we kind of discussed a little bit last podcast, but I'm still wrapping my brain around the potentiality of Drew Doughty asking for a trade.
I could see it happen. I'm not saying he's going to ask for a trade. I mean, he's got a great lifestyle out here. I know he loves it out here. I'm just saying you continue to hear these quotes from him, and you know, for a, you know, a guy in your position in media, you got to love Drew Doughty. He gives you something to write about all the time, and tells you how he feels. So
our position, Obi, you're one of us now.
You're the writer of this podcast. I'm just, I'm not sure what my role is, but I'm just here. Anyways, it'll be interesting to see how, moving forward, if the rebuild takes longer than Dewey really wants, that, you know, maybe he will, you know, want to, you know, change the scenery. But I think that's way down the road. I know he loves being an LA King. I know he loves living in the South Bay. His life's great. He's making tons of cash. And let's just hope the rebuild moves faster for both the Kings and Ducks. Because as we know, Coop, there's passionate fans in both markets. And, you know, we want to see some winning hockey here. We want the Ducks and Kings back where they belong.
You bring the happiness to this podcast. That's what you do. You bring the happiness and the insight and the joy. You make me happy with this. So you're kind of like my podcast therapist. So I just don't know what your
well, you're not paying me. You're gonna have to start paying me then, Coop. I think.
You'll see a check in the mail soon. Lisa also spoke with Tyler Toffoli recently, and Tyler Toffoli is very, very high on the Kings trade board this year, a pending unrestricted free agent. And she asked, and Toffoli never gives you anything. You mentioned athletes who talk and say really big, cause a stir. Toffoli is not one of those guys, but he did when he spoke to her, and when she asked him about kind of being mentioned in trade rumors, he goes, "It definitely bothers me because I feel like I put a lot into the organization." And this was close to The Athletic. "At the end of the day, it's a business. If they decide to move on for me, then that's the way it is. I definitely want to stay here and be a part of what their plan is. And I feel like I'd be a really good person to be involved in that." That's a lot from Tyler Toffoli right there, because again, he doesn't give you all that much. And he's just basically saying right there, "I don't want to fucking leave." Or what's the Wolf of Wall Street? "I'm not fucking leaving." I mean, he has no say in that, but I mean, that's kind of what he's saying to some degree. So yeah, or he doesn't want to go, but yeah, he does put a lot in the organization. You see him at every single promotional event. He's worked very hard here, from what I can tell. Won a Stanley Cup for them, so I can see why he's emotional, and I'm pretty sure his wife is from out here as well. So this is home for him, and that's got to be hard moving forward.
Yeah, we touched on this a little bit, you know, the last couple weeks, and with these trade rumors, and it's going to be really hard for these guys because, you know, they've been here for such a long time and they've had so much success, and you know, obviously Toffoli loves being here, and I've met him through some mutual friends, and you know, he's a really good kid. He loves playing for the LA Kings. He loves living in LA. He loves the lifestyle out here, and you can't blame him. It's arguably maybe the best place to play, or it's definitely one of the top five places to play in the league. And it's going to be hard for these guys, like, you know, Lewis and Clifford and Toffoli and maybe Carter and who knows, Dustin Brown. Who knows what's going to happen? But a lot of these decisions are going to be tough for the GM and ownership. And these guys have been here a long time. They've played well for the Kings. They've represented the organization extremely well. They love being LA Kings, but at the end of the day, it's a business, Coop. It's the shitty side of hockey. They're in a rebuild. And let's be honest, these guys are getting a little long in the tooth, and changes are going to be made. And at the end of the day, it's not personal. As much as it feels personal, it's just a hockey decision. And if Toffoli does get moved, which I think he will, it's an opportunity to go play somewhere and win another Stanley Cup. And, you know, LA and Hermosa Beach isn't going anywhere. He can always come back in the offseason.
And Ilya Kovalchuk showed the motivation of playing for a new contract now, because that's essentially what he's doing, going to the Montreal Canadiens and suddenly lighting it up and becoming a superhero over there, which let's see if he leads them to the playoffs or gets... It's amazing. I'm seeing the guy in, like, you know, like TSN's Trade Center now, and I'm like, oh my God, like, what world am I living in right now? It's just fascinating how that happens. But you know, the trying to get a new deal is really important, and Toffoli is in the last year of his contract. He's on pace for 20 goals and maybe going someplace new and play. And I mean, he's being given a good role right now playing with Andrei Kopitar at points, but maybe going to another place and getting a bigger role on a contending team can really motivate him that much more. So I think he really stepped up after Todd McClellan benched him. He addressed that too. He said, I think I've done a good job this year. It's been tough. Coach Todd McClellan has been hard on myself personally. I feel like I've responded well, took it, and grown as a person and a player. I got to agree with him on that 100%. Like, I really, really do. Like, I think that he definitely is more, at least it seems to me, like a better player and responded to that exceptionally well.
I mean, I always said through the course of my career, and it's pretty accurate, Coop, when the coach is yelling at you and all over you and you know, giving you a hard time, giving you shit, it means he cares about you. Like, if there comes a time where the coach doesn't talk to you anymore and doesn't even know you're at the rink, then you got reason for concern. Obviously, when they scratched Toffoli, that was kind of a little wake-up call for him that not any player wants to ever be healthy scratched. And when you do, that's how you get the player's attention the most, when you're sitting in the press box and watching the boys out there battle and you can't do anything about it, but watch like the fans. It's one of the worst feelings as a player. So Todd was just trying to get him going and obviously knows he's a really good player. And at the start of the year when the Kings were kind of hanging tough, they needed him to play better and be a better player from the win more hockey games. And unfortunately now they're playing him with Kopitar because I feel like they're showcasing him, and he's probably their number one trade piece right now, and I doubt that he stays with the Kings past the deadline.
I don't think so. I agree with you 100%. So, and I'm curious to see where he lands, but that'll be a big test for Rob Blake. He got a good haul for Jake Muzzin last year, and I think Toffoli, and maybe you can say Alec Martinez too, and we've talked about this, are his two best chips, and we've talked about that at The Athletic. So take a look for Lisa Dillman's story on that. It's a really good one. So we move onwards to the Ducks, and
Ducks hockey.
By
Ducks hockey.
It was reported by Elliot Friedman that the Ducks were looking to be one of those teams to potentially add a veteran contract to eat some salary in order to try to get they have $9.2 million of cap space, but to try to do one of those creative moves and get a prospect and just kind of just get a veteran and put him in the roster on a rebuilding team and make him look like a fish out of water, find an injury with him and do what Toronto does. That's neither here nor there. We're not saying they do that. It's just a joke. But anyway, so which then got fans in a frenzy that Brent Seabrook or David Backes was going to be walking through that door. Well, according to Eric, that's not going to happen. It's probably going to be a much, much smaller move. And he went over that in The Athletic and talked about the various moves the Ducks could make as far as adding another player on that front. Good idea, but Obes, like, I mean, I think of the Arizona Coyotes, right? And I think of the big swings they took, adding guys like Pavel Datsyuk, Chris Pronger. I mean, they had an all-star team from the early 2000s, basically, on LTIR. And I think they had a Pavel Datsyuk. I mean, I don't know whoever they got, but anyway. And now look at them. I mean, they've used a lot of those picks, those assets, to get really good. And I don't know. Like, I just sort of feel like the Ducks, where they are now, the situation they're in, why not take some of those big swings? Like, why not say, let's add David Backes or Brent Seabrook and bring in a really high-end prospect? I don't know. Like, why not just do something like that instead of making, like, a much, much smaller move to add some salary?
I mean, the Chicago Blackhawks would be thrilled if Bob Murray wants to bring Brett Seabrook in and get him off the books in Chicago, because I know they would love that. And for David Backes, listen, I played against both those guys. Seabrook's had a hell of a career. You know, Backes was a handful to play against. The game has changed so much that just, you know, both of them are just kind of at all their element now. And unless they were going to bring him in and put him on long-term IR like you're talking about, and I remember the Coyotes doing that, and I want to say it had something to do with them having to get to the floor of the salary cap.
You're right.
They had so little money tied up in their players that they were like, fuck, we got to get to the floor here, boys. So we'll take Hossa. We'll take my boy fucking Dave Bolin. I think they took Boley from Florida or something, right? Like,
that's right, yeah.
Yeah, so they were in one in that way. You know what? I don't know the ins and outs of it. So if Bob Murray's doing it from a perspective that, A, he can get a sick prospect out of it, and then, you know, obviously the Samuelis don't mind paying Seabrook or Backes to, you know, sit at home and do nothing, then maybe it is a good deal. But I think Brent Seabrook still thinks he can play in the NHL, and I don't think he's just going to come in here and go quietly. So that's something else they would have to deal with. And when it comes to Backes, I think Backes is still going to get an opportunity in Boston come playoff time. I know he's in the minors now, but I think once they get, you know, back into the playoffs, that he'll be a guy that they can insert in their lineup for a little size and veteran presence. So I think the Bruins will probably hang on to him, but we'll see what happens. I mean, if I'm Bob Murray, I'm trying to get as many prospects and picks as I can. And if you got to take a heavy salary, maybe that's the price you pay.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, is that you just got to bite the bullet here. I mean, you have $9.2 million of cap space. That's a lot of cap space in today's NHL. You may as well just try to take some big swings and really try to build around some of these kids, because or at least add more kids, because you know, it's tough to tell with how the current crop of youngsters is going to end up turning out, but it's been a really tough year for them. And I know that Ducks fans in my Twitter feed have been very, very vocal about what they think about the team and the direction. So, you know, I think patience is important with them, but also I do think you have to take a big swing here or there, and they haven't done that in a long time. So I'm interested to see what they do with that. So, but yeah, it looks like it's more along the lines of guys like Cody Ceci maybe walking through that door, or maybe Kasperi Kapanen, or even Michael Grabner, for that matter. It's not going to be a really huge name. And I think that may not be fun for Ducks fans, but this just seems to be the reality of how they're moving forward.
Yeah, you know, you use the word patience, and that's key to this rebuild. And listen, I get it. Ducks fans, you pay your hard-earned money to go watch a hockey game or whatever it is, and you want to see results. But, you know, and I cover the Vancouver Canucks a little bit with my Sportsnet stuff I do. And listen, a couple years ago when Travis Green took over for the Vancouver Canucks, they weren't a very good hockey team. They were tough to watch. The fans in Vancouver had enough. The building was half empty, and there was really no light at the end of the tunnel. But they believed in Travis Green because he's a great guy and a great coach. And 3 years later, or whatever it's been, they're leading the Pacific Division right now. So I know it's tight. It's only 1 or 2 points here or there. But as of right now, they're first in the Pacific Division. So what I'm saying, if I could preach anything to you Ducks fans out there, I love the Ducks. I was drafted by the Ducks. A little bit of patience here. Trust Bob Murray, trust Daly, and you know, in a couple years here, it'll be turned around, and you just got to be patient with this rebuild.
They really need Daniel Sprong to actually become something though now, because Marcus Pedersen, who they traded to Pittsburgh in that Daniel Sprong move, just got his big ticket 5-year contract extension deal that's not looking very good. And you know, I've mentioned this on this podcast a bunch, but it just continuously becomes a theme of guys that the Ducks dealt away on the blue line, and he's another one who, I mean, look, like
that's one trade you are not letting Bob Murray off the hook for, are you?
There's several.
You have continued to bring that trade up to the course of the season, and hey, you have every right to bring it up. We've talked about Shea Theodore, Brandon Montour. They have let some guys go on the back end, and it is what it is, but I love that. I love that you're not letting Murph off the hook on that one, Coop.
No, I can't. Well, how can you? I mean, he made that trade, and Daniel Sprong, who, I mean, really offensively can score, is, I don't know if it's either management, asset mismanagement, or coaching, but I mean, he's been all over the place, and Pedersen's just been a rock for Pittsburgh. And but part of that too also was Jacob Larson was a first-round pick of theirs, and I think they wanted to give him the opportunity. They thought he would be the better fit, and that has not been the case in the slightest at all for this team, which sucks for them, because I think he's a talented guy. But overall, you know, it's, they had to pick one, and they chose poorly at least so far in the sense of adding or keeping Jacob Larson, trading Marcus Pedersen.
Yeah, well, Larson was a first-rounder, right? I believe he was a first-rounder.
Yeah, and that's part of it, too.
So, listen, probably. every time you're a first-round pick, you're going to get the, you know, the benefit of the doubt, just because, hey, you're a GM. You know, you don't want to trade too many first-round picks, because that doesn't look good to the ownership. It doesn't make your scouts look good. I agree with you, though, Coop. That Larson kid, I skated with him, you know, 2 or 3 years ago when he first came over here, and you could tell, you know, skating with him, how much upside he had, how much offensive ability he had. He's a great skater. But when I watch him play in an NHL game, he hasn't taken that step. And I'm sure if you sat down with Bob Murray and asked him man-to-man if he thought Larson would be ahead of where he is now, I'm sure he would say yes. That's some things you can't control as a GM. You can just give kids opportunity to hope they get better. He's had some injuries. You got to give the kid a little bit of a break. But I'm with you, Coop. I thought he would be a better defenseman in the NHL than he is right now, and that's kind of, you know, hurting the Ducks a little bit.
Yeah, maybe there's a little bit of, you mentioned him being a first rounder, optics too, after losing Shea Theodore. You don't want to lose another first round pick or like kind of show ownership that another first round pick isn't working out.
Exactly.
So that could be part of it. But yeah, one quick Marcus Pettersson story. I don't remember if I mentioned this on this podcast, but I mentioned it to people before, is that I remember going out to my car once after Ducks practice, and I saw him walking out, and I'm thinking, okay, like after practice, or I guess morning skates at Honda Center, the team, a lot of guys park where we park. And so I'm like, okay, what ride is he going to? And he was going to his Volkswagen Jetta.
Volkswagen Jetta. He must have, yeah. he must have been
he had just been recalled, but
yeah. He must have been I mean,
it looked so out of place,
dude,
honestly.
Honestly, my rookie year, so if you've seen some parking lots around the NHL, the Anaheim Ducks one is, you can put it up there with any in the league. A, because guys are making good money, A, and B, we live in a perfect climate where you can drive sick sports cars, right? Like, you go to the Edmonton Oilers and Calgary Flames parking lot, you're going to see a lot of Ford and GMC trucks with salt all over them and snow, and you just can't drive a sports car there. So in Anaheim, they have a sick, sick parking lot. My rookie year, I got, like, from my boy John Paradise, I got, like, this used, like, 10-year-old BMW 5 Series that was, like, basically a clunker. And long story short, the boys were giving me a hard time every day at the rink about how I was bringing the value of the parking lot down, but I couldn't get a new car till Bob Murray told me to get a place. So when you're a young guy, basically, Coop, you just drive what you can until they tell you to get a place, and then you can kind of get a few paychecks under your belt and get a little upgrade from the Jetta to something a little cooler than that.
I mean, I just thought it was it just looks so out of place. I was just thinking, okay, you know, he's in the AHL. He probably at least drives, like, I don't know, like a Mercedes, you know, like not Maserati or like the high-end sports car, but like, you know, a good ride. And I just saw him go to the VW, and I'm like, woo, man, that's he loves reliability, probably. I could say that. I had a Jetta, actually, for a little bit. So it used to be believe it or not, Obes, used to be my dream car. Was it Volkswagen Jetta back in the day?
You got to give these kids in the American League some credit. And, you know, unless you get signing bonuses aren't what they once were. Unless you're, first, second, third round pick, you don't get that much of a signing bonus. And, you're not making that much in the minors and after tax, and you pay your agent. I mean, you're basically, if you're playing the American League, you're making just average money like anyone else who's working a 9-to-5 job. You're not really living the flashy lifestyle. So you kind of just drive what gets you the rink and gets you home, and that's why you work so hard down there, because if you get to the next level, you can trade in the Jetta for a sick Beamer or something. But, that Anaheim parking lot, and Getzy, he always has a new car coming in and out there every day because he's part of CNC Motors. So if you ever seen the Anaheim Ducks parking lot, it's pretty legit.
It's funny. I once asked Ryan Miller if he drove a Tesla, and he said, yeah, and I asked him if it was for environmental reasons, and he goes, no, so I get in the carpool lane. Because he was still living in West Hollywood, I thought that was pretty funny.
That's huge for him. Then driving to practice every day, you need the carpool lane.
Oh yeah. No, it was pretty funny. So, we just finished the All-Star game or All-Star weekend in St. Louis, and every year I watch this, and I'm just like, oh boy. And everyone has their hot take on how to fix the All-Star game, and there's really no way to fix the All-Star game. It is what it is. But the NHL, I think, made the smart play next year, going to South Florida, Sunrise for that All-Star game, going back to a destination location. With all due respect to St. Louis, hard to get guys up to go there in the middle of winter. I think for the league and its sponsors, you got to go to the spots where fans and players and sponsors would vacation for a few days. That is my big fix for the All-Star game. Anaheim has yet to host an All-Star game. Obi, how do we make this happen? And I mean, like, it's at least 2 years away, but it's got to happen at some point, right? I mean, it's just like Anaheim needs an All-Star game.
Crazy, man. When I read this in our little rundowns you do for us, your sick little rundowns.
How sick are they?
It blew my mind. They're pretty sick. I honestly thought they had it like right when the Ducks, 4 or 5 years into when the Ducks, first came in the league and the Honda Center was brand new and the team is owned by Disney. It never made sense to me that they didn't have one back then. It's just, I guess it's shocking to me. And I'm 100% with you. Around the Honda Center now, it's gotten a lot better. There's lots of good restaurants, hotels. Obviously, Disneyland's right around the corner. Yeah, we got to get an all-star game out here for the Ducks fans and Southern California, and players would love to come here. And, you know, from the Honda Center to downtown LA is like, you know, obviously with traffic, if you time it right, it's, you know, 35 minutes. So, yeah, I'm with you, Coop. I think the NHL's, you know, nuts not to have one out here, and whatever we can do here at Point Breakaway to get the fans involved to get the all-star game out here, let's get it going.
Well, one thing Point Breakaway seems to have done is brought you and Ryan Getzlaff back together on the golf course. Is this true? Did our podcast bring you two back together on the golf course recently? I feel like your relationship, while it was always great, has gone next level since since we started doing this podcast.
You think the podcast has taken us next level, do you? I don't know.
I do. Well, I mean, you mentioned how after Spitgate, he called you when you were in Vegas. You were just like, why is he calling me right now?
Well, he just knew I was old school and that I would be pissed off that Hathaway didn't fight his first shift out there, which I kind of was. But Hathaway, we don't need to go back in time here, but he did end up fighting. But he should have fought him first shift. And Getzy just knew I would appreciate that. But so yeah, we obviously they had their all-star break, and me and Getzy teed it up at Big Canyon Country Club. And you know, I've been playing golf two or three times a week. Getzy hasn't a golf ball in like probably since the season started, since his golf tournament or something. But he shot 77, but I ended up beating him in the match. I beat him one up, so he had to give me some money, which was nice. Anytime you can get in Getzlaff's pocket, it's pretty good. So, but for him to come out and shoot 77 for a guy who hasn't hit a golf ball in 6 months, I ended up shooting 80. So technically he beat me, but in the match where the money was exchanging hands, I got him because he had to give me two strokes. And it's hole by hole match play. It doesn't go by like, so if I made a six and he made a four, he just wins that hole. It doesn't win by two. So I ended up beating him in the match. Got into those deep pockets, and we had a great time. He's, you know, he's doing well. You know, he's excited for the second half here. He feels like the rebuild's coming along, and he's in a good spot. So I'm happy for Getzy, and it was great seeing him because obviously during the season I don't get to see him as much as you know, I'd like to.
Obes, give me the 4-on-1 in his golf game. What's he good at? What does he need to work on?
He's good at he's such a good athlete, man. He's honestly good at everything. He drives the ball extremely long and accurate. He hits like a little power fade. He just had brand new irons. He got dialed in at the Kingdom of TaylorMade, so it was the first time he used his clubs, which gave me probably a little bit of an advantage. So his iron play was not kind of as crispy as it usually was. And believe it or not, the one little down thing about Getzy's golf game used to be his putting, and you wouldn't think that because he has such sick hands when it comes to playing hockey and any other sport he ever played growing up. But the one thing is you could get him on the greens every now and then. You could catch him on a bad day, but he's got his putting figured out. And you know, whenever he decides to hang him up, which I hopefully isn't for a long time, once he starts playing golf consistently and has time to practice, you know, you can see him playing some fun tournaments, some amateur tournaments or whatever he wants to do, because he's legit.
And you know what? I actually have more appreciation for Ryan Getzlaff after, like, through this podcast, with what you've done with bringing him in and the stories that you've bring him on as a guest and the stories that you've told of him and hearing about his golf game, his sick rides. We've had a lot of Ryan Getzlaff stories on this podcast, so hopefully we can get him back on at some point. He was a great guest, and I mean, just world-class dude. And really, I think personally, watching him play, he's got kind of a Jumbo Joe Thornton type thing going, to where I think he can really play several more years. I don't think he'll play till he's 40. You mentioned how he's got the wife and kids, and he loves to play dad, but ultimately, I think he's got a lot of good hockey left.
Yeah, Getzy can play as long as Getzy wants to. I definitely don't think he's going to play into his 40s like Jumbo Joe did. But, you know, his oldest son, Ryder, I guess, is a great baseball player. So he spends a lot of time. He built like a batting cage at his house for him. Woo! So he spends a lot of time working with Ryder in baseball. And Getzy was a good baseball player growing up. And, you know, anytime he's not playing, he's going to Ryder's baseball games. So he's a huge family man. And his son's going to be a good ball player. So I know he's excited about that.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm excited. You know, it always feels like when, like with athletes' kids, it's those thoroughbred bloodlines, man. I mean, there's something to it. I mean, I come from a short Jewish New Yorker bloodline, so hence was not a very good athlete. But yeah, I mean, you know, when athletes' kids end up being pretty good, they may not always make it pro level, but I mean, it's pretty. It is something. So anyway, that about does it for Point Breakaway. Obi, fun show as always. Appreciate your knowledge and your understanding of the Kobe Bryant situation we talked about at the stop, at, sorry, not the stop, at the start of the podcast. And again, please listen to our Lakers podcast and continue to check out all of our coverage on Kobe on, at The Athletic. Also, when it comes to Point Breakaway, please rate and subscribe to us on Apple. 5 stars, 100% 5 stars all the way, because we are a 5-star podcast, right, Obes?
We feel like we're a 5-star podcast, Coop, 100%, buddy. I'm with you, buddy. And yeah, just to finish up with the Kobe thing, all your listeners out there, Coop, you and your family, everyone, you know, it's whatever, maybe corny, but life's precious. Enjoy every day. And yeah, so that's all my thoughts on that. And it's a tragic time here in the LA Newport area, but everyone will stick together and get through it. And yeah, it is what it is.
Yeah, it is what it is indeed. So, again, thank you so much for listening. If you care so much, do please rate us 5 stars. If you want to get 40% off The Athletic, theathletic.com/pointbreakaway. And you'll get a bonus episode, too, for subscribers only, in which this week I will make Obi take the team-specific player poll. Last week I made him take the league-specific anonymous player poll, but on the upcoming edition, you will get to learn all the secrets of his teammates. So, and this is news to him too. I'm just breaking it to him right now.
Yeah, no, that'll be fun, Coop. I'm down for that 100%, buddy.
All right, thanks. Appreciate you all listening. Take care, everyone.